Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. The 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence is an annual international campaign that kicks off on November 25th, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and runs until December 10th, Human Rights Day. The campaign was started by activists at the inauguration of the Women's Global Leadership Institute in 1991. It is used as an organization strategy by individuals and organizations around the world to call for the prevention and elimination of violence against women and girls. The campaign focus this year is called Unite, Invest to Prevent Violence Against Women and Girls, with a special focus on programs, actions, legislature, and education. The Northern Society of Domestic Peace is a nonprofit organization that has been in operation in Smithers for 33 years. Their housing for women and children escaping violence is called the Transition House, a safe place to recover and rebuild. A new build is under construction to offer long-term residence options for women and mothers with children up to 18 months. Bronwyn Young is a coordinator at the Transition House and is speaking to me about the programs and supports offered by the Northern Society for Domestic Peace.
So my name is Bronwyn Young, and my position is program coordinator for the Smithers Passage Transition House.
So the Passage Transition House has been operating in Smithers for 30 years?
Even more.
Yeah? Can you tell me a little bit about, I guess, the beginning of it, how it came to be?
So our executive director, Carol Sechuk, when she moved to the Valley, started the Transition House as the foundation of NSDP, really. And so she is the original runner of that and is still providing a lot of support through her executive director role.
So the new build has included new units for women and women with children, as well as a longer duration for them to stay at the house. How will that affect this transitional time for women and children escaping violence?
Hopefully immensely. One of the main things that we see reoccurring for women is that there's no place to go after, and that the isolation, the violence, the trauma has real effects in real life, things like what their income is and what their ability to be in community is. So this will be a buffer for these women and children to be able to stay longer. A transition house, which is the passage house, those stays are typically around a month, not very long. It can be longer, it can be shorter, but it's very temporary. These 12 housing units, there's six specifically for women and children who are leaving violence, and then six for young mothers who are needing some extra support to help parent their child. So the timelines for those is a year and a half to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And in that time, they have access to the programming that they need specifically for them. They get to help say what that will be, help decide what their programming will be. And it is a program agreement, not a rental agreement. So there's, you know, stipulation with that, that they're really in the place that they're wanting to get that support to move forward, and they're ready to do that, and we'll be there for them.
Wow. I didn't realize that it's a programming agreement, one, and also that they're able to, or not able to, but that it's a creative space to kind of envision what they need to transition, and also, you know, maybe with the space and the confidence to try new things that maybe that they hadn't had the confidence to before, or no one was pushing them to before. So I didn't realize that. That's really important.
Yeah, it's really great to have the space and the time for skill building and confidence building. And we are really creating a little community back there, which is really exciting for the whole community. And, you know, women and children deserve to have this time to find out who they are, not in relation all the way to the trauma, but who they are as a bigger part of themselves. I'm really excited to be able to witness and support that growth.
Excellent. I guess now this one's a little more personal to you as well, but as a coordinator, what is your main role? But also, what do you feel that you do in your position that maybe surprised you or that you didn't plan was going to be part of your job?
I came into it with no real experience in transition housework. My background is really with maternal health. So I have been a doula for over 20 years, helping mums and families with the entrance of their new child. And women's health has always been something that's been really a passion of mine. And understanding that key supports at the right times can make all the difference over time for somebody. So it didn't surprise me necessarily what women were sharing that their experiences were. I think that if we're curious at all, we can have a good understanding of some of the things that that are experienced behind closed doors. But what surprised me, I think, is over the years, the mental health and addictions piece has grown exponentially. Trauma, mental health, addictions, they all hold hands, but this is something that is bigger than it was when I started 10 years ago. Also, it surprises me some of the concern that the community has with shelter or coming into a shelter. And so I really encourage anybody who is experiencing any kind of violence at home, and there's lots of different types. If you've never been to a shelter before, please come and have tea. Come see how much of a home environment it is, how it's not probably what you think it is. We do have limits to what we can support. And so know that if mental health and addictions are not part of your story, that that doesn't mean that you won't be safe in that space, mm-hmm. that we support everybody to the best of our ability. And if we aren't the support for you, we can definitely help connect you to who might be.
So this week is the last week of 16 Days of Action. And the goal of these 16 days are to bring awareness to the issue of violence against women. So not that I need to tell you this, but just kind of for some context, that the UN suggests that one solution really lies in robust responses, including investment in prevention. Mm-hmm. However, data on how much nations are committing to counteract violence against women and girls still remains glaringly sparse. Does Passage House or NSDP participate in prevention measures? And if so, what are they?
We do. So I want to just first give a shout out to the men who are doing the work. I believe that that's where the solution lies, mm-hmm. is with men being a much bigger part of the solution. To the men who call out when they see another man doing something inappropriate, saying something inappropriate, to the man who has those uncomfortable conversations with their friend, to the man who chooses not to use violence himself, thank you. We need more of that. And I hold you up. Thank you so much. So as far as, community prevention, we have at NSDP something called the camp program, where we go to typically planting camps. They're remote, they're co-ed, they're typically young, healthy people, and sexual violence, harassment, other forms of violence against women happen in those camps. So we have now, again, part of the men being the solution, one of the presenters is a man. It makes all the difference. So that has been really helpful and has expanded exponentially since we started, because people are seeing that it helps. And so we've moved into wildfire camps. We're in Alberta. There's more people who are better familiar with that here, but that's a great program. Also doing public speaking, talking to you, having conversations with people who have the ability to make change, collaborate. Prevention is tricky in that trauma is intergenerational. So it's finding a place where we can be the support that the person wants and needs, and recognize that they are the best person to understand their story and know what they want and need. Prevention starts young. And so NSDP has lots of amazing programs and counselors for, children all the way up to seniors.
I feel like so often I'm asking the person who's the busiest to give me their time. And I mean, that's kind of just how life works. If you want something done, just ask a busy person.
Yeah.
But what supports do you feel that you would like to see also in the community? I'm not sure if that's something you feel comfortable answering, but, are the RCMP are they doing enough? Are their programs proactive? Maybe even in, town council as well. Is there kind of supports that you would like to see in the town, or ones that you want to shout out maybe as well?
I think that the RCMP are doing a better job in understanding trauma response, mm-hmm. in understanding disclosures and what that can look like and how it doesn't follow a perfect line typically. So I would be encouraged by that and really like to see more people in positions of authority, in positions of decision making, get that trauma-informed understanding about what happens to the brain, what happens to the body, and how it doesn't maybe look like what you think it's going to look like. I think that that would be helpful. I think that that's a gap that could, I see that happening in the RCMP, and I'm grateful for that. So that's a gap that could still be brought together. I think that, we all are witnessing these same problems that are pretty out in community, where violence and trauma and dysregulation are rampant. What we deal with at transition houses are more what happens behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. They're often things that families feel shame about, that, sometimes it feels like that the only thing that a family has a harder time with than the abuser is the truth teller. And so how do we get the narrative to shift on whose responsibility is it to not use violence? Mm-hmm. I think that's, and where are the skills to do that? Yeah. Because people come from different places, people have different skills. Not every man who uses violence wants to use violence. So, having our men's program be funded sustainably is a gap. That would be amazing.
How can people support NSDP? Maybe that's monetarily, or what kind of supports would help NSDP from the community?
We all miss Misjudged. Mm. That was so fun and so much work. So I think that, we're looking into doing more fundraising and what that would look like and what the community would want to participate in. So that's kind of in the works right now as conversations inside NSDP. Help by having those conversations with your family and your friends. It really starts in our spaces, in our personal lives. I encourage everybody to be okay enough to be in an uncomfortable conversation without feeling like you have to fix it for them, but that they know that there's somebody who's going to believe them and help them on their journey. And if anybody needs somebody to talk to about what those conversations might look like, please come into NSDP. Please come up to the Passage House. We have lots of amazing staff that have a lot of good skill on how to do that.
Well, that was it for the questions that I had, but was there anything else that you wanted to add to this conversation that I didn't inquire about?
I really appreciate having you come and speak to me and bringing a bit more light to this. It's what, obviously I live and work in every day. And so I think that it's really great to have people be curious about it. Mm-hmm. Something that often is very shunned and unaccepted as a part of how we want to see our society. I'm grateful to be honest and open about the fact that we are struggling right now. Women, children, men, communities, and the more we can be compassionate and be open to each other, the better things will be.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Amnesty International Right for Rights campaign is a letter writing campaign which takes place on or around the International Day for Human Rights, which is December 10th. In Smithers this year, the Right for Rights campaign is taking place at École La Grande Ourse on Saturday, December 9th from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. You can show up in person and will be given a list of 11 cases of focus by Amnesty International this year. One of those 11 cases hits close to home. The case is the urge for Canada to stop criminalizing Wet'suwet'en land defenders. If you are unfamiliar with letter writing campaigns, the volunteers at the event will help you write your letter, copy and paste a sample letter already written by Amnesty International, and you can choose one or all 11 cases to write toward. The event is free and open to the public. If you can't make it in person but want to participate, you can still submit your letter online at amnesty.ca write for rights. Here's Beth Richardson. She's a Smithers volunteer for Amnesty International and is speaking to me about the details of this year's campaign.
My name is Beth Richardson, and I live in Smithers. I've lived in Smithers since 1989.
Okay. Thank you, Beth, so much for speaking with me. We are talking about the Right for Rights campaign, which is run through Amnesty International. But can we just start with what is the main function of Amnesty International for our listeners?
Sure. And I'll tell you, maybe begin by telling you what it is. So it's a global human rights movement. Over 10 million people who are active in more than 200 countries, and they just campaign for a world where human rights are enjoyed by all. And Amnesty International is independent of any government, political ideology, economic interest, religion, and it's funded mainly by membership and then public donations. So the independence means the reports are taken seriously, say, from all levels, from media to global institutions like the UN.
Mm-hmm. When and why did the Rights for Right campaign begin?
So the Rights for Rights, actually the annual Rights for Rights campaign, it's also called a write-a-thon, began in 2001 when a small group of Polish activists held a 24-hour letter-writing marathon, and it's become the world's largest human rights event. And it corresponds with Human Rights Day and the adoption of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was adopted by the United Nations General Assembly December 10th, 1948. So this year is the 75th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Human Rights, and it's the 22nd Amnesty International Right for Rights campaign.
Okay, great. So it is a letter writing day. Can you describe what a letter campaign is, and I guess also what the function of it is?
So millions of people worldwide are speaking out in support of individuals everywhere whose fundamental rights are at risk. And during the campaign, participants around the world send millions of messages in the forms of letters, emails, tweets. They sign petitions on behalf of the individuals. And so Amnesty posts information sheets and sample letters with addresses. And usually there are around 11 cases featured in each Right for Rights campaign. So participants can copy the sample letters. They can use the information to write their own letters in their own words. They can take photos of letters, post them on social media like Twitter and Instagram. And often what they're doing is they're writing on behalf of prisoners of conscience, so individuals who are persecuted, imprisoned, killed, tortured because of their ethnic origin, their race, their religion, their gender, sexual orientation, or other personal orientations, and the peaceful exercise of their right to freedom of expression. In some countries, actually, people are persecuted, imprisoned, and killed simply because they have, a misunderstood condition, for example, albinism. So usually one type of message is sent to the authorities who are responsible for the human rights violation and who have the power to make change. Mm-hmm. So the authority could be a king, a president, a government, chief of police, and even the head of a corporation. So the message pressures the authorities to be accountable for their actions, and it also shows them that the world is watching.
Yeah.
Because human rights violations are usually carried out in secret. And then, so the other message is a message of solidarity, and that message is a message of hope and support, which is sent to the persecuted individuals, their communities, and their loved ones, and it just shows them that they haven't been forgotten.
So has there been measurable proof that letter writing campaigns work?
Yeah, and if I could, actually, I'll read something to you.
Sure.
From someone who was released, but I'll just start, by testimonies from released prisoners often attribute the support that they received to the improvement in their situation. So death penalty sentences are overturned, charges are sometimes dropped, wrongfully imprisoned people are released, individuals in prison can be treated more humanely. Like, say, for example, sometimes access to granted access to medical care that they might have been denied, mm-hmm. access to lawyers, proper legal process, contact with their families, protection from torture and other harms. And often those responsible for human rights violations are brought to justice. And sometimes it even results in changes to law in the country. But yeah, campaign results, updates, and success stories can be seen on the website. So you can just go to amnesty.ca. So this letter is a classic. I do not know when this was written, but it's Julio de Peña Valdez. He was a labor organizer in the Dominican Republic. So he says, he writes, when the first 200 letters came, the guards gave me back my clothes. Then the next 200 letters came, and the prison director came to see me. When the next pile of letters arrived, the director got in touch with his superior. The letters kept coming and coming, 3,000 of them. The president was informed. The letters kept arriving, and the president called the prison and told them to let me go. Another couple of examples are, it was Bernardo Cal Exol, and he was defending communities affected by hydroelectric projects on the Cajabon River in Guatemala. And so in November 2018, he was sentenced to over 7 years in prison on false charges, just aimed at preventing his human rights work. Mm-hmm. And during the 2021 Right for Rights campaign, over 500,000 actions were taken for him. And in March 2022, he was released.
Wow.
And he thanks the people who wrote in the Right for Rights campaign. Yeah. And another example of solidarity was a Russian singer-songwriter in Russia who was imprisoned for opposing the war. She's still in prison, but a letter was received, a message was received by Amnesty from her lawyer, just saying how much of a comfort those letters were.
Wow.
Yeah, for both of them.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing those. Anecdotes matter, you know, and real stories, they matter.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
So we kind of covered this a little bit, but if someone doesn't know who to write a letter to or which governments to implore justice or maybe even how to begin, how should they get involved with this campaign?
Right. So I'd say then the first thing to do would be go onto the website and you'll look for campaigns and you can host, which is what we're doing here in Smithers. Mm-hmm. We're going to host a campaign, or you can attend a letter writing event. So anybody in Smithers could come to the letter writing event on Saturday, the 9th of December. And or if you're unable to attend, you can go onto the website. You can read the cases, the sample letters. Mm-hmm. You can copy paste the sample letters and just write your own. And there is also a contact us on the website, and you can email the AI team, and they are so supportive of anyone wanting to write letters, and they seem happy to answer any questions and are really quick to respond to requests for help and information. So
excellent.
I'd encourage anybody to do that.
So there are pressing human rights issues that need addressing in northern BC. Some examples that come to mind are RCMP injunctions, human rights trials that are currently in tribunal. Would the Right for Rights campaign address more local issues as well as world issues?
Yes. So this year's cases begin with an appeal on behalf of the Wet'suwet'en land defenders. And the information sheets that are provided by Amnesty on the website outline how the Wet'suwet'en people have never ceded their traditional territories, as confirmed by the Delgamuukw Gisdaywa decision by the Supreme Court. And it also acknowledges that the Wet'suwet'en people have been harassed, intimidated, and forcibly removed and criminalized for opposing the construction of the Coastal GasLink pipeline on their territories. And so the authority that in that case that we're writing to is Premier David Eby, asking that BC drop all charges against the Wet'suwet'en land defenders and recognize that defending ancestral lands and water is not a crime, but even part of a solution to the climate crisis. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the messages of solidarity always go to AI, to Amnesty International.
Okay, yeah.
To protect the people that are already in trouble in their countries.
Sure, yeah. So you can do it locally at one of these campaigns or online. And it's also, too, it's being able to participate with something powerful such as Amnesty International probably has a little more of a banding together of a community approach to something mm-hmm. that is affecting people globally around the world.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The letter writing events have been a really nice ambiance. And I think people come in and leave feeling like they've done something to hopefully to make the world a better place.
Yeah. Okay, my last question is, what are the details of the event that's happening in Smithers?
So there you can, the event takes place on Saturday, December the 9th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the School Grandeurs. And it's 3490 Fulton Avenue in Smithers. And you can contact me if you have any questions. So I can, my number is 250-847-1448.
Beth, was there anything that I didn't ask that you think is important for people to know about this campaign or Amnesty International, or even just personally your involvement with it as well?
Oh, gosh, I'm thinking so many things. Yeah. I mean, all the things that, that Amnesty has done, you know, even, I guess, campaigned in 2002 for the creation of the International Criminal Court, you know, the world's first permanent international judicial body capable of bringing perpetrators of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes to justice. Yeah. And yeah, so I think an organization that is doing really good things. And I think the Right for Rights campaign, yeah, can make a difference, as we already discussed.
Yeah,
yeah, that there seems to be evidence, you know, and certainly gratitude expressed by people around the world for
absolutely,
for changes in their situation, improvements in their situation.
Well, thank you again so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.